financial or legal responsibility as a parent, but also known to them as a special person in their lives. So Felicity and I are the parents and the mums, and that's the case even though so far there is absolutely no legal relationship between the boys and Felicity. We don't yet have our parenting orders organised because we've been a little busy. And we'll of course do that as soon as we can, but as Jenna pointed out, that does end at 18. It doesn't include a whole lot of stuff around inheritance and a whole lot of other federal matters. When we decided how we were going to go about this in terms of involving a known donor, it was then a matter of logistics because the wonderful man who did that for us lives interstate. So the logistics were going to be quite difficult, and so we travelled interstate to Queensland and New South Wales and checked out lots of clinics and different options, and we were going to fly him here, there and everywhere. And this was because we couldn't have access as lesbian prospective parents to assisted reproductive technology in Victoria. So we spent a great deal of money and time zipping around the country trying to find out what our options were for. In the end, we were very fortunate, ironically enough, that I was diagnosed with an infertility condition called polycystic ovarian syndrome, which meant that I could have access, following a change in the law from the McBain case in 2000, to assisted reproductive technology in Victoria. So we were able to have a donor donate in Melbourne, and we started the long process of trying to conceive our twins, which we eventually did. So, yeah, but in that process, ART is not the cheapest thing. And in as much as, yeah, I mean, we've spent, I don't really want to do the maths. And we got two for the price of one in the end, which was great. I wouldn't want to do the math. It was many, many thousands of dollars, and it was certainly exacerbated by the fact that I was treated as a single person under the Medicare safety net. Another irony being that we're planning to have one more for the country, as Peter Costello asked us to do, when we're hoping that Felicity will be the birth mother for our next child. But of course she will be considered a single, though even though we're basically financially dependent on Felicity, she'll be considered a single. So the fact, you know, I mean, as Janet said, you're always ending up spending much on, you know, various medical expenses with kids, and none of that will count towards the safety net for Fliss. So, she'll be starting from scratch in terms of having to pay costs for whatever she ends up having to do for conceiving the next baby. The other thing is, I guess, that Felicity, as far as we know, doesn't have a medical infertility, so there's no access to the kinds of technologies that heterosexually married couples would automatically have access to conceive their children, particularly donor insemination, which is what we would want and would be the simplest and least medically invasive way of conceiving children. So how it works, what we're doing now is we're both basically sharing up the parenting 50-50. Felicity's working part-time, and so we're a little less comfortably off than some have spoken before, but you know, both really enjoying basically being at home with our sons and sharing if I'm breastfeeding. But other than that, everything else is absolutely 50-50, and we've got fantastic support from both of our extended families and a great community of family and friends who certainly consider us to be both parents and family. So we're very lucky in that way. But certainly in the broader community, we have a lot of curiosity and stares and have constantly having to explain ourselves, but we're a walking community education campaign and we're getting used to that.
And we often just say that our whole lives are a community development project anyway. I was just going to briefly talk about another aspect of discrimination, which is what Janet briefly touched on, which was work-based discrimination. And I had two part-time positions, and I've given one of those up for 6 months without pay in order to be able to parent with Sarah. And under the award that position had, there was no status for parental benefits for a female parent. You had to be a birth mother. There was only for the male spouse, and it still used language such as that. But luckily for me, in both my workplaces, both my bosses were parents of twins, so they did agree to just sort of waived that, and I got 1 week's paid parental leave in the position that I left, and then took leave without pay and up until December for 6 months. I think the other sort of issues that we wanted to highlight were, although we haven't looked at getting a parenting order, like Janet talked about, there are a lot of sort of hurdles towards getting a parenting order through the federal court. And as of July the 1st this year, a whole lot of things did change in terms of that process. Not a great deal, but it does. Some of the language changed, etc. And what our concerns are that while Sarah will be an applicant and I'll be respondent one, we still need to name our donor on that form during the application process as respondent two. And up until this date, because we went through a clinic in Victoria, the status of our donor is that he is a donor, not a father, and that's under the state law based on the Melbourne IVF clinic that we used. And our concern is that once we name this person within a federal bureaucracy, that there will be a whole lot of obligations prescribed to him, perhaps, that there might be questions that come up about his role, or does he spend time with us, and will there be, you know, opportunities for his extended family to claim more status than my extended family, given I don't have a biological connection to the parents, and so on and so forth. And these are just the constant kind of level of fear that you live in when you choose to create a family and want to create a family under this kind of homophobic and discriminatory systemic laws in Victoria and also in Australia. So that's another concern that we have. We did want to raise a few things, I guess, that are state-backed but do have an impact on federal identification or acknowledgement of our families. And one of them is, in Victoria, the birth certificates require you to have a mother and father. And we're actually, because this is a big event coming to the city, we're going to go in to the births and marriages after this and register the boys. And there's no application process that allows me to be registered or listed on that form. And when I do have B3, there'll be no way to list the Raffi and Calamus siblings either of that child, and that's another concern for us. And that does impact on things like applications for passports in a federal state. And so there are intersections with state law and federal law that we find will discriminate against the children and discriminate in terms of how our family is perceived by the law. We also wanted to just talk about the fact that the law needs to catch up with reality. And in the paper today, Ted Bailey, who's the state opposition leader for the Liberal Party, made some comments about the fact that every child needs a mother and a father, the opportunity to have a mother and a father. And if you look at the census statistics and the sort of information around extended families parenting, single parenting, gay and lesbian people parenting, it's unfair to claim that every child actually has a mother and a father, and that there are children out there being parented excellently and with no detriment to their mental or social or physical status by people who are their parents, but who perhaps don't prescribe or live within a heterosexual model of family. I think the other issues too that people raised about class and socioeconomic status and education and those impacting on people's participation in this inquiry is important. Not everyone has access to a computer and that kind of thing, and I noticed that you just did refer to Lee's comments and agree with those, and we just wanted to make that clear as well that, yeah, we are quite both community development activists, so this is not a very difficult thing for us to do, but we do know that there are times when we do speak on behalf of other people who don't have the same opportunity or voice to be here and to say what concerns them. The other issues federally that we wanted to raise were the concerns about vilification of same-sex attracted people, their relationships and their children by politicians and government-funded organisations, and also organisations that are grant recipients of governments, such as the Australian Family Association, and that there needs to be some way in which those organisations have some kind of accountability to not be homophobic, racist or sexist when they're recipients of government money. The other issues that we felt were going to impact on our children and the best interests of our children is funding for schools, and the fact that there are no requirements that homophobic or transphobic or gender stereotyping within schools is should not exist. And that it's actually the stigma and discrimination that exists in society that makes it difficult for our families to exist rather than the existence of our families, if that makes sense. And just finally, that we made a another application to the inquiry, another submission to the inquiry on behalf of a campaign that we're coordinating called Love Makes a Family, which I guess encompasses everything that we wanted to say today, is that love makes a family, and regardless of whether your laws catch up with our lives, that's the fact that we these are our children and these are our families, and that's, and our extended parent families all accept that. And the Love Makes a Family campaign is particularly responding to the Victorian Law Reform Commission, which brings up a lot of issues around access to assisted reproductive technology, adoption and surrogacy, including parentage in other areas such as birth certificates. So we do hope that the Herriot Inquiry does at least leave that submission and be informed about some of the impacts of state and federal law on our families and the creation of our families in Victoria. And thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Well, thank you, Felicity and Sarah. In fact, one of the questions I was going to ask you, I had three questions I was going to ask you and you've covered all three of them. So, but one of them was about that campaign and getting some more detail of it, and we certainly will look at that submission and understand that you've raised those issues in the context in which that campaign is run. So thank you to Felicity and Sarah Marlowe, and thank you for telling us your story and sharing your activities and your sons with us this morning. That's fantastic.